My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He is now the Executive Vice President at the Family Research Council. During his military career, General Boykin spent 36 years in the Army, was an original member of the Delta Force. He later commanded elements of the Delta Force, as well as all Green Berets at one time, and spent many of those years in special operations. He also served in the administration of President George W. Bush at the Pentagon, and he joins me now to offer his thoughts on the unfolding story of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, what happened in 2009, and the administration's actions in getting him released less than a week ago. And, General, it's always good to have you with us. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you today.
What doubt is there about what happened in 2009? All of his platoon mates, at least the ones that have come forward publicly, have said in their minds this is a clear-cut case of desertion. Some have said the Pentagon reached that conclusion long ago. The administration now, of course, is giving different statements on what happened, with National Security Advisor Susan Rice going so far as to say he conducted himself honorably. What do we know for sure?
Well, I think we know for sure that he is a deserter, that in fact the 15-6 investigation that was conducted immediately after his departure from his base there concluded that he had deserted, and I think all the evidence supports that conclusion, particularly given the fact that he had asked a series of bizarre questions of his teammates, and he also left a, I think, a very revealing message there explaining how he was ashamed of being an American and wanted to help the people of Afghanistan. This guy is a deserter.
And it doesn't seem like the media has that good of a grasp on the severity of what it means to be a deserter. Explain that a little bit better for us and why his platoon mates and others who know this story well have not been thrilled about his conduct.
Well, desertion in combat, and I emphasize in combat, which means you're in a combat zone, you are, you know, routinely engaged with the enemy, is punishable by death. That should give you some indication as to how serious this is taken. And his teammates are now responding to that because they realize that it, when a man walks off and leaves his post in combat, he jeopardizes everybody else. A, because he's not there to help them to defend their post, and B, because he once captured, or in his case, once you voluntarily turn yourself over, you have a tremendous amount of information which would be very useful to the enemy. Whether he was a collaborator or not is yet to be determined. My guess is that he was, but even if he was not a deliberate collaborator, the interrogation techniques of these people is such that he probably provided an awful lot of very useful, valuable information to the enemy.
What type of investigation should pursue at this point, and what do you think will happen?
I think they should do what they call an Article 32 investigation immediately. It should be ongoing right now. That is a prelude to a court-martial. There can be no other option. They must take him to court-martial, and they must hold him accountable for his actions. If he didn't desert, then the truth will come out. But I think what will ultimately result is the fact that he will be prosecuted as a deserter. Now, you know, the other thing that we need to, you know, focus on, and there's been a lot of media attention on this, though, is the fact that there were other soldiers that were endangered and even some that we are positive now were killed in the efforts to find him. And that, as far as I am concerned, that exacerbates his crime from being just a simple desertion to being one that resulted in the deaths of his comrades. So I think that that has to be considered as well as we talk about what to do with him. He's, from my perspective, he needs to spend the rest of his life in prison at a minimum.
One of his former mates in Afghanistan said he's a deserter at best, a traitor at worst. Treason is about as bad of a crime as our Constitution describes. Would you put him in that category?
Absolutely. I mean, what else could you call it? Now, here's one of the things, and this is a little bit off the topic here, but it's germane. One of the things that I have found so disgusting about this whole thing is the fact that our president has gotten up and so boldly proclaimed several times that we never leave anybody behind. And that is absolutely a preposterous statement because we left four people in Benghazi. And there's still no accountability on that. But the other thing I would say is we still have a Marine down in Mexico We also have a woman with two American children in Khartoum, Sudan. We have a pastor, American pastor, named Abedini, that's still in an Iranian jail. And I can see no effort on this administration's part to go after them. This was about emptying out Guantanamo. This was a backdoor deal. The reasons for it, the details of it, it will probably never come out in its entirety. But this is an ugly story.
We're talking with retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He's now Executive Vice President at the Family Research Council. And, sir, let's talk a little bit more about the administration's role in all of this. Obviously, based on what you've already told us, you don't believe releasing the five figures from Guantanamo in exchange for someone of Bergdahl's record is worth it. If this had been a soldier of sterling character and record, would you have made this deal?
No, I would not have. But I tell you what I would have done. I would have gone in and executed a rescue to try and bring back a soldier that had indeed served honorably. I would have made a rescue attempt. Now, you say, well, did we know where he was? Look, we found Osama bin Laden, didn't we? And don't tell me that, you know, our intelligence community didn't know where he was. In fact, I think quite the contrary. I think they did know where he was. I think they knew in general terms where he was. And if he had been a service member with honorable service, I think the right thing to have done would have been to launch a rescue. Remember 1970, the United States put it all on the line to go into a place just 50 kilometers south of Hanoi to try and rescue a group of Americans that were being held there. And, I mean, it was a very risky operation. But that was an ethos that was being followed. It was a value that we would go and get those people, and we went all the way into North Vietnam and tried to get them. That's what should have happened if this was a man with honorable service. He wasn't. So you have to ask the very question, why didn't the military go and try to rescue him? And I'm going to speculate that it's because they were not willing to risk another life for a guy that they knew was a traitor.
One of the other issues, of course, that's being discussed is that the president and Republicans and Democrats agree on this, failed to give Congress the 30 days for review for the recommendation to release anyone from detention at Guantanamo Bay. Obviously, their contention in the administration was that Bergdahl's health was at issue and it was a crisis moment. They didn't have time to have Congress evaluate this. What do you make of the fact that he did it and the explanation?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, if you look at the videos of him, there's a lot that we can't see, but he certainly does not look like his health has deteriorated a great deal to me. I'll leave that to the doctors to determine that. But there was still not a good enough reason to do what we did with regards to the release of these prisoners. Now, with regards to the congressional notification, it was really bad form for him not to at least call in the chair and ranking member of the Intel or the Armed Services Committee and tell them what he was about to do with regards to the release of these prisoners. That said, this is a two-edged sword. The one area where the president needs to have great flexibility is in war fighting. And I don't know whether this requirement was constitutional or not. Somebody needs to challenge it. But again, it's an example of how this president only obeys the laws and follows the policies that he wants to. In our Constitution, it falls under the category of high crimes and misdemeanors, where you just selectively obey certain laws and you ignore others. Immigration laws would be a good example of that.
General, another issue that's come up, and the president directly addressed this earlier in the week in Europe, he said that throughout the history of the United States, from George Washington to Abraham Lincoln to FDR to the present day, when wars are over, we return prisoners of war. And the big debate, of course, is whether he was a prisoner of war, whether the folks at Guantanamo Bay are prisoners of war, or whether they're detainees, or in Bergdahl's case, a hostage. You've got 36 years of military experience. You were in the Pentagon when this debate was really going on during the George W. Bush administration. How would you classify the folks at Gitmo, and how would you classify what Bergdahl was in the hands of the Taliban?
Yeah, see, I think the people at Guantanamo are enemy combatants. Now, they were taken there for a reason. They were taken there because that's not U.S. soil, and if you bring them onto U.S. soil, they have certain rights, you know, under our legal system. I classify them as enemy combatants. They were very much out there killing Americans. They are enemy combatants. but they fall into a different category. They're non-state-sponsored enemy combatants. So they have a completely unique category, I think, for those people. As far as Bergdahl, I think he was a willing collaborator. I'm not sure that he was even held as a, quote, hostage. I just don't know what his status was when he was there. But the administration never called him a prisoner of war until this all unfolded. It is traditional. It is, in fact, it's even required by international law or convention that at the end of the war you exchange prisoners. You turn them back over to each other. But I think he, being Bergdahl, falls into a totally different category.
We've learned from media reports that the White House expected some blowback on the fact that they released five key Taliban figures in exchange for one American, and that they did not consult Congress. They were expecting euphoria nationwide over the fact that an American who had been held by the Taliban was now free and on his way to the United States. We've seen several different platoon mates tell a very different story than the administration's been telling about Bergdahl's record in Afghanistan. And the administration is now saying that those platoon mates are engaged in swift boating of Bergdahl by coming out and criticizing his conduct in uniform. How do you react to that?
Do you think if Bergdahl had served honorably that those guys wouldn't be coming out now rejoicing in the fact that he had been returned? Use a little common sense and just ask yourself, would they have had this reaction had he not abandoned them, had he not deserted from his unit? This is not a swift boat campaign. These are young soldiers speaking the truth about what their sentiments are with regards to this guy. And I will tell you also, the fact that Susan Rice went on television and said that he served honorably is just another example of why she needs to be removed and replaced, because this is the second time, Benghazi being the first, where she has gone on television and openly lied to the American public. This administration knows he deserted. They knew how people felt about him, and she went out there and called his service honorable. Well, if that's the case, then you tell me what the concept of honorable service is for this administration.
General, we'll leave that as the last word. Thank you, sir, as always, very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Good being with you.
Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, now the Executive Vice President at the Family Research Council. He spent 36 years in the U.S. Army, was an original member of the Delta Force, later commanded elements of the Delta Force, and was commander of all Green Berets, many, many years of special operations experience. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.